Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Jay Nodis is the Senior Director of Health and Wellness for Topco Associates, LLC. He is responsible for leading the charge to expand health and wellness programs beyond the pharmacy while maintaining the importance of the pharmacist's role. Dr. Nodis is an expert in product development for clinical operations and retail pharmacies with over 20 years of professional experience. Prior to Topco, he served as the Director of Product Development for Walgreens, where he led their award-winning clinical program development team and launched programs including medication therapy management and point-of-care testing. Dr. Nodis earned his PharmD degree from Midwestern University, where he is currently serving as the President of the Alumni Council. Outside of this, he spends his time teaching at a Hungarian school, advocating for the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, and spending time with his family of eight. Hello, Dr. Nodis. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hey, good afternoon, Iqbal.
Good to have you on board. And is it okay if I call you Jay?
You absolutely can. You can call me Dr. Jay, but that would imply that I play basketball and you don't want to test out my skills.
I don't know. There's a lawsuit pending right there, right? I mean, I'm sure Dr. Jay's listening to this podcast and be like, hey, I need to reach out to these guys and find out who's infringing upon my name. Just kidding. Super happy to have you here, Jay, and really excited to learn more about what you do and the impact that you're having on healthcare. There's a few that I'm sure that are listening on this podcast today that know you, some others that might know me, and maybe some that are unfamiliar with both of us. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Fantastic. So as you said, I am Jay Nodis. I am a pharmacist. I graduated in 2002 with my bachelor's in pharmacy and then in 2003 with my PharmD. I am a pharmacist by training and I did operate pharmacies in my career, but I'm also a health and wellness enthusiast by lifestyle. So that creates a little bit of conflict with work-life balance because I tend to take my job home and incorporate in everything else that I do. But I honestly, I love what I do. So what is my role in healthcare? Well, currently, I am the Senior Director of Health and Wellness and Business Development for Topco Associates, which is a member-owned cooperative. I really focused on developing innovative, high-quality, you know, cost-effective solutions that are really trying to help long-term viability and success of member pharmacies and the grocery stores in which they reside. So basically, I'm trying to set up my clients as destinations for the healthy in addition to solution centers for the sick. So where that comes into play with what I had said is as a pharmacist, that's where my training is. But as a person, you know, I'm still really focused heavily on the wellness side. I personally try to incorporate a lot more of the concept of wellness into everything I do, as well as how I do it. And so I know we're going to talk about it more today, but you know, there are eight dimensions of wellness ranging from physical wellness to mental wellness, but also things like social wellness, financial wellness, community wellness. You've got things like sustainability, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's really incorporating all that into what we do day in, day out, which is going to help take healthcare to a higher level.
Jay, I love how you describe, you're actually standing at the crossroads of multiple pathways. And what I think positions you in a really good spot is that not only are you able to provide solutions and new pathways for your patients, you get to do it in a way that other pharmacists and maybe even other healthcare professionals don't have that opportunity. In fact, for the listeners today that are wondering about Topco Associates, you know, most people may not recognize the name, but they recognize the members. And I really want to take this opportunity to educate the listeners, because sometimes, you know, we get very enamored with like big names, but in reality, there are so many other organizations and companies that are supporting the interests of the healthcare organizations that we are well accustomed to, that they kind of get left behind. So if you're not familiar with Topco Associates as an organization, you should know that it started actually 78 years ago, really just as a co-op to help farmers and other people get paper goods and dairy products at a time when World War II was happening and there was a lot of shortages. That merger between those two companies that focused on those areas has led to this amazing opportunity where now in today's world, it is a $15 billion company with almost 50 members. And some of these members are extremely well known, right? They are operating in multiple spaces like supermarkets, grocery chains, U.S. wholesalers, and of course, pharmacies. And, you know, some of the big members that I'm familiar with as part of the Topco, you know, partnership or the Topco association would include companies like Myers and Schnucks and Hy-Vee. You know, I've driven past all of these at some point in my travels in certain areas. So it's really amazing to see that. And, you know, even today, like you guys actually have several brands that are well known in certain stores. Just 2 weeks ago when I bought flowers for Mother's Day, I ended up buying things that I saw Bloom & Company. And I was like, oh, now I can, you know, put that together. Even Top Care, which is a, you know, an over-the-counter brand line. Like these are things that most people will see and go, oh, Top Care or Bloom & Company. But, you know, putting these connections together helps the listeners understand there's really an organization that is instrumental in making these things happen. And Jay, again, you're standing at the crossroads of so many pathways, and that you really get to provide us a lot of great insights, which I'm hoping to glean from this conversation. Why don't we start by understanding a little bit more about what you and your team are doing? You said you're a senior director of health and wellness and business development, and you actually get to help healthy patients improve and maintain their lifestyle, but you also find solutions for the sick. What's something that you and your team are currently working on that you have identified as a big initiative for you and your members, or something maybe that you've recently done that's led to this phenomenal success that you want to share on the show?
So I think there are probably a couple things that I'd love to talk about. You know, one, just to call out the strength of Topco as a cooperative. So we are, you know, we are only as good as our members who make up the cooperative. And so that's one of the benefits of Topco, is that you really get a chance to tap into all kinds of different skill sets and perspectives and come up with the best and the of possible outcomes. Nothing really can share that more than our COVID response. And obviously, a lot of people have probably talked about that. You know, the purpose of sharing the COVID response is really that nobody really knew who Topco was from the levels of CDC, where they were trying to organize a lot of the vaccine rollout. And Topco was in a very unique position there, because many of our members would not have had access to vaccinations if it wasn't for the ability for Topco to develop a network administrator agreement relationship with the CDC. So that was instrumental, and I know Topco members have administered over 8 million shots at this point. And you know, when we look at it from that perspective, you know, that was a tremendous opportunity with all hands on deck across the organizations, as well as the teams here at Topco to bring everything together. So that's probably one of the bigger things that we've done recently. But I will say that the unique thing about a lot of Topco members, especially that their pharmacies are inside grocery stores. And when we talk about what is that, you know, what kind of an opportunity does that afford? It's, you know, everything that we were trained to do in pharmacy school, to really look at the holistic, you know, patient care concept. And, you know, you're looking at how can you prevent diseases from occurring, but how can you also, you know, focus on lifestyle recommendations and changes to make sure you optimize, you know, therapy. Well, a lot of that is actually focused on food. So I think one of the things that we're working on today is really trying to leverage the fact that because we're a pharmacy inside a grocery store, we have a lot of those tools right at our disposal. So I can't stress enough the wonderful partnerships that pharmacists and registered dietitians have, so that they're able to do medication therapy management, comprehensive reviews, and then do a handoff to a dietitian who can then actually walk that same shopper, patient, customer, however you call them, down the aisles and explain what portions look like and the different types of fresh foods and, you know, what some of the labels mean. And when you're reading a food label, how do you actually interpret it? And then how do you incorporate it in your day-to-day regimen? So I think that's probably one of the bigger opportunities that we have in our environment. And frankly, pharmacy in general. So as margin pressures continue, and we're looking for new areas of reimbursement and value, it's through these types of opportunities that we really start to shine.
And Jay, you know, you jogged a memory for me. I remember being at Midwestern University while I was in pharmacy school, and there was a student, a colleague of mine, a peer, and she was a registered dietitian that chose to move on and accelerate her education by becoming a pharmacist. And, you know, the marriage between those two disciplines was really where she was able to take healthcare to a higher level, is because she was able to do what other pharmacists at that time could not do. We were very trained in terms of, hey, here's a pharmaceutical product, here's the side effects, here's the dosing, and this is how it will impact you, right? But that's like only one stripe of a beach ball. You really need to be able to talk about the holistic perspective, the food that you're putting in, the nutrition. You know, we all know like what goes in comes out, right? Garbage in, garbage out, healthy in, healthy out. And I love the way that you're describing the advantage that you, that Topco members have, because now you get to work with two experts, right? You have your registered dietitians who can talk to you about the nutritional value of what's available inside a store, which makes it very convenient for not just patients, but also the pharmacists that they're coordinating with. But then pharmacists also have the ability to partner with that RD and then be able to talk to them in hand. So this is really remarkable to see that. I know you and I know your history. You and I have had some great conversations for almost what, 2 decades. So I know, you know, how much and how passionate you are about championing pharmacists' rights, mostly pharmacists' abilities and responsibilities and their scope, right? And being a pharmacist myself, I'm 100% on that bandwagon too, that we can do so much more than today what we're allowed to do. One of the things that I hear regularly in circles where pharmacists, academic instructors, you know, just anyone within the universe of pharmacy is always somehow the conversation gravitates towards PBMs. Pharmaceutical benefits management companies and pros and cons on both sides. There's always like a discussion that comes up, right? And, you know, more recently, there's been more of a louder sentiment coming from one side than the other. But, you know, again, knowing who you are and knowing how you champion for pharmacists, like, what do you see as it relates to, you know, navigating in this space? Like, how can pharmacists be better at what they do and help the companies that they either work for or own themselves to generate more revenue, increase customer service, and provide better clinical outcomes?
So that's quite the question. Not entirely loaded, because you're absolutely right. This is the times that we're currently in. I mean, at the end of the day, especially retail pharmacy, we need to find other sources of revenue. So with margin compression that, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent is happening across the board, pharmacy and pharmacists, we really need to look elsewhere, and we can't continue to rely on product markups to generate margin. So, and I know this has been, as you said, the key theme for even the decades that we've been pharmacists, but it has not been more relevant than now. The complexities of the payment model has really led us to look for more innovative and different ways of doing things. And the good news is we are seeing a lot of that right now with cost plus PBM models. We've got NADAC plus models being tested and proven, you know, across the country to be more effective at recognizing not just the pharmacist value, but it's really more normalizing just the reimbursement model. So you don't have pharmacists choosing between, if I give you this medication, I'm going to lose money, or, you know, if I don't give you this medication, then I'm breaking my oath, right? So it's these cost models that we have to look at to really try to bring more opportunities to the table. And then we have now cash-based pharmacies. And we there are a couple of pioneers out there like Blueberry that have been out there for several years, more independents. But now we've got Shark Tank guys like Mark Cuban hitting the headlines with bringing out cash farm-based pharmacies as well. So I think we're going to see a lot of focus on fair reimbursement to really try to at least establish once again the long-term viability of pharmacies in the future. But in addition to this, I think there's tremendous opportunity to expand the pharmacy business model, especially as we just talked about with COVID, where arguably pharmacy and pharmacists have saved the world with their role in immunization administration and accessibility. I think what you see is people out there now finally see pharmacy, or not finally, but see more of what pharmacy can bring to the table as a viable alternative for convenience services, right? We are more accessible than any other healthcare provider. And then I have to plug grocery pharmacies. I mean, folks are in a grocery store 80 times in a year. And if there is a pharmacy in that store that they can talk to, now that once again, you have more access than ever. So I think one of the big pieces on the pharmacy services, as you said, we have to look at leveraging the growth that we've seen with immunizations. If we can get test to treat to include pharmacists, that would be awesome to further increase that service accessibility. And I think it's a great next step toward really getting that provider status finally pushed through and really being reimbursed for the cognitive skills that we were trained to provide. So yeah, so ultimately, like you said, it's more services, it's new payment models, new sources of reimbursement, and really incorporating new wellness opportunities into what we do and how we do it.
Jay, would you mind if we tapped into that a little bit more? You mentioned test and treat, and I'm not sure, and I know what that is. I'm sure some of the listeners may know what that is, but could you elaborate on what test and treat is?
Yeah, test and treat specifically focused on COVID is really looking at the COVID testing and then having the COVID treatment available. Today, the way it's set up is that you must see a prescriber, a recognized provider, to be able to get a diagnosis on the test. So it could be something as simple as getting a FloFlex test over the counter. And if the test comes up positive, then you are diagnosed as a positive COVID diagnosis. And then the prescriber provider would write a prescription for a Paxlovid or molnupiravir, which you can then take to the pharmacy to fill. There is nothing in that a pharmacy or pharmacist cannot do. Pharmacists can conduct that same test, can read the same test, and can, based on protocols, prescribe what happens next. And so there is a great deal of effort really pushing down, allowing pharmacists to do that, or even something as little as telehealth within a pharmacy, so that if it isn't the pharmacist, then it could be a provider within the four walls of a pharmacy without having to have the upcharge of having a clinic on site and the incredible investment that comes along with that.
I think that can help open more doors, right? I'm familiar with a lot of initiatives that other companies have also invested, rabies testing, HIV testing, all of these different types of tests that are both in production and also available, but with lots of restrictions and limitations in terms of where pharmacy and pharmacists have involvement. So I'm super excited to hear about that and knowing what you and your company are also doing to be able to promote that with your members and working in partnership with them, I think is really essential. Being a buying group, like there's a lot of pressure that not only you as an entity may have to face, but your members certainly voice them and you're working to be their advocate. We've said it before on this show, we've said it on previous episodes, we're going to say it for many, many more episodes to come. Like COVID really, changed the world. And a lot of organizations are still either reeling from it or they've kind of stabilized, but they're still like trying to figure out what good looks like in this space. When you think about buying groups and not only the challenges that they've already and traditionally been facing, but now in light of a pandemic, like what does the world look like for buying groups in 5 years? Like, do we see like more mergers? Do we see, more divestitures? Do we see, completely novel ideas and novel business strategies to be able to serve members at a higher quality and at a faster pace?
I think you're going to see everybody trying to do anything they can to look at cutting some costs and to be able to grow their margins. So I don't think that's that's specifically focused on buying groups, whether they're a cooperative like we are, or some of the other ones out there. That's really an aggregation play. The more people you can bring to the table, and the more you can commit, potentially the cheaper you can get the product, which allows you to have the margins that you need to be viable, right? And I think that kind of cost cutting is one of the only strategies that people can employ today to make ends meet, which again doesn't necessarily grow the business. That just keeps you alive. So that's a survival tactic. The thrival tactic, if there's such a word, is really then looking for those other areas of reimbursement, which I think that there's been an incredible amount of the pharmacy industry coming together and aligning their resources behind these growth opportunities, which are ultimately going to be the bigger driver of what changes.
Yeah, it's almost a wait and see approach, because I hear exactly what you're saying, right? I think, some of my past guests that have come from telehealth and health tech companies are also similarly aligned in that thinking. There's only so many pages left in this playbook that we can run. And to be able to look outside for new ideas is, again, the only way to really find an opportunity to thrive. Survival is, what everybody's, going through, and not everyone is doing it well. So I will just say that, to kudos to you and others that have been on the show that are finding ways to be able to advance their initiatives. Jay, I want to talk a little bit about you. We've talked about, your organization and your passions and what you and your company do. But one of the reasons why I bring people like you on is because you've had a very remarkable career. Like, it's been a 2-decade long career where you have had a touch with people, processes, and just companies at pretty impressive scales. So yes, today you are a senior director of health and wellness at Topco Associates. But prior to that, you were actually a director of product development at Walgreens. You were also a director of retail clinical services for them. And you've also served as a business management consultant for Healthy Perspectives. So you've had really just, you've had great visibility and great impact in a variety of spaces. And so to have moved from different career ladders or rungs on this ladder to move into this role, there's a lot of thought that goes into that. You don't just wake up one day and says, yo, here, opportunities in front of my face, abandon everything that I've just worked on. We're just going to move forward and forget the past. There's a lot of emotional thought, a lot of, calibration of, what value will I get out of this decision? And I know that you are married with children, right? So there's a lot of, factors of that nature that goes into that as well. How did you know that when you, accepted the role as a director at Topco and now moving into a senior director role, what were some of the decision-making processes that you had to go through in order to determine if this was the right role for you?
I have to say, I love this question because it's not an easy one to answer. I believe that everything that we have experienced and everything we've done throughout our lives or careers, in this case, makes up who we are. And you have to have a plan if you want to be able to to collect all these different experiences and make you a better version of yourself. Right. So I guess at the core, I am what I would call a serial entrepreneur in voluntary captivity. So serial entrepreneurs are typically aligned with my strengths. It's innovation. It's being strategic, futuristic. It's being an activator, trying new things. Right. I absolutely love creating new ways of doing things. Looking at things again, not to use the phrase, but it's of the consulting company, but it's looking at it from a healthy perspective, and then really cycling things through to see where there is a need and what we can do to fill that need. So the voluntary captivity portion is really actually more focused on, because I love working with people. So I think I've found as my career evolves and I do with it. I love developing people as much as I love developing products and services. And so as a consultant, it does get a little bit lonely from the perspective that as you jump from project to project, team to team, you get to meet a lot of people, but you don't necessarily get to build some of these long lasting relationships. So I think, I realized a long time ago, my strengths, being that serial entrepreneur, works well in many different environments. As you said, I worked at Walgreens for actually over 20 years, and I helped lead their award-winning clinical development team to launching programs that have made a tremendous difference in pharmacy today. So, you know, launching programs like medication therapy management, working through point of care testing, launching software systems, which really help, from a industry perspective, guide the pharmacist down a path of being able to disrupt their current workflow so that they can have time and focus on the patient. So it's disrupting their, their factory workflow portion so they can do what they're trained to do. But that was really Walgreens. After leaving Walgreens, I was the principal consultant at Healthy Perspectives. That's really, as an independent consulting company, we get to choose who we work with, and get to choose what programs we work on, projects, and it really helped me understand and use again my strengths on transforming healthcare one strategic vision at a time. So this is actually how I met Topco. Topco was one of my last clients, and we meshed very quickly. So there were a lot of synergies there from the perspective that, again, health and wellness really fits well with the grocery background and the concept of food as medicine, and then making these healthy choices. So it also aligned very much so with my personal life as well as, again, my clinical and career-based life. So as a consultant, we worked on a bunch of different projects, and essentially they bought more and more of my time such that, eventually we sat down, talked through and said, hey, this is one of those opportunities we couldn't refuse. I think the biggest stipulation is exactly in my title, though, and not the director portion, but the health and wellness side. One of the things that I said is if I were to work with a large company again, it needed to be larger than just pharmacy. And that's where... So to your point, that's when I knew it was right with Topco, is they gave me the freedom to look at things a little bit more, from a holistic patient perspective, looking at the total needs of a person. And we agreed that, looking at this from a total store solution, and we were able to, plan on how to help our members be more destinations for the healthy, as well as solution centers for the sick. So as an expert in product development, it worked across all different areas, and I was able to just implement that right there. But again, aligning with the personal goals of how I want to continue to change the world from a health and wellness perspective, it just really fit.
I really appreciate that. And I think that that's really helpful to hear the journey that you had to go through, because having been an independent consultant myself, certainly, I absolutely resonate with what you said, and that was, you're going to work on a lot of projects, and you're going to see some great, outcomes, and your clients are going to be happy. But the inability to actually develop long-term relationships, you sort of feel on an island for quite some time.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Jay, you've seen so many different things. You've had the opportunity to be involved in so many different avenues of growth and development. When people reach a certain stage of their career, they do reflect on some of the early experiences they had that kind of changed or reshaped the way that they approach people and problems and processes as well. I know I've had my pigheadedness where I was like, oh, this is what I was taught. And so I'm just going to apply this. And then you take theory and you put it in the real world and you're like, yeah, this is not it. And so those are the things that I call about life lessons that change the way that you approach things. Is there a life lesson that you would share with us, that something that was like an aha moment, an eye opener, where you realized that you needed to either do things differently or approach individuals in a different manner to be more effective?
Yes, short answer is yes, although I don't think there is one. There are probably a few key ones there. Probably the most impactful for me, though, was knowing your strengths. And it's not just knowing your strengths, but leveraging them and growing them. I think there was kind of a change in mindset in the last 30 years where I've been in retail, where there was this big focus early on with, identifying where the gaps were and filling those gaps. But by doing that, sometimes you actually spent so much effort trying to correct some of the issues that you might have, that you forgot about the fact that you're really good at some things. And if you were to highlight more of that, and then build complementary teams that try to fill in the gaps for each other, you know, then that has so much more productivity around it. So that, to me, that's kind of one of the bigger ones. But I think that's also, you know, really leveraging one of the other aha moments that I've had, which is that so much is focused on trust. So I know you've got the Stephen Covey Juniors out there that talk about, you know, working at the speed of trust, but I can't stress that one enough, that you want to have a team around you that trusts you and that you trust. You know, similar to that, just from this the current environment that we're in, you know, from a the great resignation perspective, you know, Simon Sinek would say, people don't leave companies, they leave people. So when you think about it from the trust perspective and the leaving perspective, just you don't want to be the person that people want to leave, right? You want to be the person that someone comes to you and say, look, I've gotten a great opportunity. I'd like to talk to you about it. But obviously one of the hardest things that would be for me is to leave this team. So, you know, that's also a big theme and life lesson is it's about that trust around you. And then probably, you know, one of the biggest, you know, impacts on the trust is being, you know, utterly and completely honest with yourself, whether it's about the strengths that, you know, I've stressed in the beginning, or if it's the development opportunities. There are ways to do that so that you're not nitpicking, but it really does help build that trust with your colleague. If they see you feeling comfortable enough to share with them, you know, and here, I'll share with you. So I know when it gets into that level of you know, devil in the detail, I can do it. But it's going to take a lot of stress and effort on my part, where my strength is really getting it to the 80% and looking at it from a different perspective and turning stones upside down and seeing where can we find something different and really, you know, getting people to open up about ideas they might have and feeling comfortable sharing that. So I surround myself with people who have that strength of the devil in the detail, but it wasn't until I was, again, being able to know what my strengths are, identify my gaps, and then trust people enough to share it with them so that I can start building teams that really work better together.
You're really talking about how to build a functional team. And I like how you talk about it in the way that you have. Not a lot of people have experienced all three that you've described, and I'm sure they will at some point, but not everybody learns the lesson quick enough. I know I was one of those people where it took me quite a bit of time to understand where my opportunities were. I was told many times, I get this is really where you shine. And so I just doubled down on that, but I never took the opportunity to trust someone else to fill in my gaps. You know, I would just kind of like gloss over them. Well, yeah, okay, maybe that's not the best thing, but look, I'm doing this twice as well, and I'm a solo act. That doesn't work in the real world. And I think that that's really that's right. Helpful to hear. Jay, you know, again, when we think about our careers and how we've come to the levels that we are at today, you know, many of us, and I know you are equally as honest and as humble as many of the other past guests, none of this was a solo act. Nobody gets to be where they are today just because of their own strengths or their own skills or their own knowledge. There are people that literally take us under their wing. They open doors for us. They give us the ground to walk on and the air to fly. Is there an individual that, or maybe more than one, but is there at least one individual that you would like to, you know, acknowledge and appreciate on the show today and just give them a shout out for the work that they did on you or for you to help you achieve the successes that you had, that you've had?
Yeah, I feel like I'm on the Academy Awards here. I'd like to thank my mom and like to.
I got the music button ready to pull you off stage.
There you go. No, but you know, all kidding aside, and then, you know, we don't necessarily take enough opportunities to thank those people, you know, there, because there are many of them and they change throughout your career. And in my case, so I remember it really well in my early days as a scout back in, you know, grade school and high school. One of my childhood mentors, Emery Goutte, he was the first pharmacist I've met. And it was, I had no idea what a pharmacist did, you know, other than my mother made me go to the pharmacist to pick up the medications, you know, if we weren't feeling well. This guy was a very charismatic individual, but the knowledge on medications and over-the-counter medications and how, you know, he actually, you know, as a scout, I was learning a lot about, you know, nature. And so he was showing how like botany actually helped develop a lot of the medical world today. And so he kind of knew a little bit about everything, and I loved it. So, hook, line, and sinker, as a sophomore in high school, I already knew I wanted to be a pharmacist, and I had a path laid out. So that, you know, that really was a huge boost in my career development, because I know, even as I work with my own children, you mentioned I'm married with kids and I've got a lot of them. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I worry about is, do they have a good handle on what they want to do, or at least have a path that they can veer off of if they have another passion. But again, I had that path, which was great to be able to create some goals around and help drive my life forward, even when there were times that things weren't going so well. But that really just got me started. And probably do some name dropping here. So thanks for the opportunity. But I think one of my mentors early on in my actual career in retail was a gentleman by the name of Charlie Goodall. Now, Charlie was a pharmacist as well. He was, he oversaw a department that I was working in Walgreens when I was in IT. So I little known fact, I was in IT before I became a pharmacist.
Wait, really?
Yes. for about a year and a half, I was, working in, testing software and working on, looking at new releases. So at Walgreens, I worked on releases, I want to say 14 through 19 of the Intercom Plus dispensing software. So that was fun. But Charlie actually took the time to listen to some of the recommendations that I had. We talk about the aha moments. I really wish I knew then what I know now, because I would have started looking at my strengths and I would have said, hey, Charlie, here's what I think needs to happen. But he did kind of pull some of those out of me. He kind of saw some things in me that I wasn't, again, fully comfortable with. That was really that product development and innovative part of myself. And he really supported me and wrote letters of recommendation to get me into pharmacy school. He was there for me in the beginning. He also was one of the guys that was more instrumental in listening to me and bringing me back into the corporate world at Walgreens a few years down the road after I'd already been working in the trenches from a retail perspective as a pharmacist. So it was at a conference many years later where he was presenting some of the new changes. And I said, hey, Charlie, I don't know if you remember me, but I'm a pharmacist now. I'm working in such and such store. And I've got a whole lot of ideas, but one thing that you said was interesting, and I just wanted to ask you one question, and it led to another conversation, which really helped me develop my next career path. When I got back to corporate, Charlie was there, but it was also my department vice president, Perry Don. He was an amazing, again, charismatic leader who believed in me and my visions and fought for my projects, even when he wasn't fully sure he understood how they worked, just that they brought value. And, again, they had a purpose to go forward. And he said, like, I'll fight for you. And there are a lot of those types of people that I kind of gravitated toward. Nimish Javeri, who's now at McKesson as a president there, and I still look at him as someone whose career I follow. He was one of my mentors and one of the folks that, again, I tried to watch and pick up certain tips, but he helped me recognize again that my strengths had power. So as much as Perry was pushing through the projects, Nimish actually, we had a program that was looking at the pharmacy of the future, and he had pulled me onto his team, which it made me feel very important. And that's where I try to do that now in my own roles, and I leverage folks' strengths and let them know how important they are so that they can, again, hopefully find out what their strengths are earlier on in their career than I did. But he was also the one that really helped me realize that my contribution could actually change the world, not just change the day-to-day for a pharmacist. Jack Cantlin was my vice president after that. And he was tremendous at helping me shore up some of my limitations and being able to leverage other strengths. So whereas all the leaders before that helped me be who I was, Jack really helped me build the team. He also gave me the freedom to develop myself as a leader. He encouraged me to find external concepts and bring them in and try to incorporate them in my day-to-day. Through that mentorship, that's where I discovered things like accountability training, which is now part of who I am as a leader. I believe in the below the line accountability and above the line accountability and how they work together to build that trust and be able to identify what needs to be done, building a pathway, and then actually executing things. He also helped me, find my way through the different strength finder type solutions that were out there. And he allowed me to not just incorporate that with my own team, but the entire department so that we can come together better as a team.
That sounds great. I mean, you have had quite a heavy hitter list of people that really saw the potential and watered it. Like, you know, these were seeds that were probably embedded within you and they could see that. I think that that's remarkable. And I'm really glad that you named them by name.
Can I do two more? I feel like I would be amiss if I didn't. I realize it's a little bit longer here, but you know, the life lesson here is the progression and how, you know, as I progressed in my career, I had different mentors that had different roles. So Brad Wasson was one of the more recent ones, again, late in my career at Walgreens, but he helped me identify with the fact that work also really had a work-life balance component. We shared some similarities from some of our personal challenges. And so he actually became not just a mentor of mine, but a true friend that helped me, again, really balance out where is work, where is home, and then how do you really incorporate things across that? And then just most recently, you know, I learned again that each individual I work with, be it my current boss and mentor, Tom Roussanellos, or my member leaders, you know, each of them have something special that they can teach you. And really, again, life lessons, it's up to you to decide how to use each of these bits of wisdom to guide your career. And that's ultimately, you know, some of the advice I'd like to give future leaders. Don't be shy to network, develop relationships with your current leaders, learn about what helped them get where they are, and then don't be afraid to ask them how they can help you tease out some of the things that help you get where you want to be.
So Jay, that brings up a good question, right? I mean, we as students, we as instructors, we as, you know, consultants, we as, you know, professionals, we're told repeatedly, you in order to be successful, in order to try new things, break boundaries, you have to network. And so the what is always apparent and presented. It's the how that's always the mystery. And if there's like a secret that you have that you'd want to share on the show in terms of how you network successfully, I think that would be valuable. Is there like a special Jay trademark that you use at events or even virtually online in order to be able to show an example of what good networking is?
Definitely not a Jay trademark because again, I've learned this from other folks as well. I think the biggest bit of advice I can give on networking is don't be disheartened if it doesn't work. So not unlike product development, or in the pharma space, what is it? 1 out of every 100 drug makes it to market or something. It could be the same with networking. You know, you stick to your passions, make sure you have questions that align with your passions, but also knowing, you know, from a communication playbook, stick to their passion. So if you're going to approach someone, you know, talk about something that's interesting to them, and then tie it into something that's interesting to you. And if it works, who knows where that may go. But don't be disheartened if it doesn't go anywhere the first time, the fourth time. You know, there may be someone who doesn't remember your name several times, but then one day you hit the jackpot for the topic that they really want to know more about, and it'll continue to flourish into a good relationship.
I'll echo what you've said, because I think that sometimes people let the external negativity or the external disappointment seep internally, which causes them to create change within their strategy. Personally speaking, I've followed your rule. I've always just been, this is who I am. This is how I operate. This is how I think. And this is how I speak. And it's going to attract a certain type of clientele, a certain type of customer, a certain type of peer or professional. But that's the kind of people that I want to be surrounded by and learn from. Right. So, you know, it's not about quantity. It is about quality. And so maintaining your originality, your brand, and the way that you are authentic, in your dealings with others, I think that that's, you know, very synonymous to how we say, don't let what other people's rejections, you know, sway you from your path. you know, we talked quite a bit about, you know, many of the things that you've done in the past. Is there one specific achievement or accomplishment that when you reflect on your journey, you think and that say that was probably the highlight of my career so far? Again, Jay, you have many, many more decades ahead of you, but, you know, just even at this snapshot in time, is there something that you really look back as a feather in your cap?
So there are those that can be seen outside, and then there are those that can be seen more internally. I would say the most rewarding parts of my career are where I've been able to mentor folks and either help them through tough times or help them get onto a pathway that leads them to promotion. So I think those are probably the most rewarding and it's kind of a personal accomplishment, but it's really their accomplishment. But I'm most proud of helping them along those ways. From a product perspective, I think that my role in leading and launching medication therapy management, or MTM, back in 2006 with the launch of the Medicare Modernization Act, that's the one where I feel like that took pharmacy to the next level and really, you know, paved the way to where we need to be, which again is being reimbursed on a large scale for the cognitive services that we've been trained to do and can do so well. I think the MTM portion, I also developed some software around it that again interrupted their current workflow to draw their attention to the fact that there was an important message that needed to be conveyed to the person that was standing there in front of you. And then ability to track that, because again, if you can't measure the changes that you're making, then again, it doesn't look like it exists. So those are part of the care management aspect of pharmacy that I'm really proud to be able to say that we tried to pave some of those ways. Unfortunately, the reimbursement wasn't where it needed to be. And so some of those in my mind turned into successful failures, where we had the right workflow, we had the right training, we had the right pharmacists that were having those conversations, but we didn't have the right reimbursement model. And so, some of those were sunset. But again, I don't believe in failures. I think you either win or learn.
I like that very much so. Jay, when it comes to your team, right, as a leader, you've mentioned this several times, being a leader, you've learned, what accountability is and how to exercise and execute, not in an authoritative or dictatorial way, but, for the sake of effectiveness and improvement. And you also have a responsibility of developing your team members so that they are the best of who they are, both on a personal level and as well as a professional level. The interactions you have with them, will bleed into their efforts and their activities as well as their results. So when Right. it comes to leadership development, is there a particular book or resource or a speaker or an author that you naturally gravitate towards for your own development, or ones that you typically share with your team to help them on their journey for personal growth or leadership development skills?
Yeah, I think this, much like my own mentors, you're going to find that each one of these folks have something that might be worth picking up. But I don't have one. I have a wide, birth of different people that I follow. So we've already talked about Simon Sinek. We talked about Stephen Covey Jr., obviously Stephen Covey Sr., with the 7 Habits of a Highly Effective Person. I mean, I think those are core. The Oz Principle, not as in Dr. Oz, but the Wizard of. The Oz Principle is a great accountability training. So I read these on a regular basis. I'm part of book clubs. We're currently reading What Got You There Won't Get You Here, or What Got You Here Won't Get You There, sorry. So that's a very interesting book about developing some of the gaps that you might have in the next level of your career. My current favorite tool, though, is probably this tool called Human Intelligence. And no, I do not work for them, nor am I getting any royalties here, but Human Intelligence is great because it's a lot like the Strength Finder programs that are out there that highlight some of the key characteristics of who you are, so your personas. But it doesn't stop there. It really does a great job of helping others understand if Jay in this case is a maverick and an improviser and a creator. Here are some tips on how to communicate best with Jay. Here are some areas that you might find challenging with Jay and how to mitigate them. Right. And then it also talks about what motivates you, what are key behaviors, work energizers, et cetera. So perhaps the best part of this tool also is that it's a relatively easy questionnaire. And it shows the comparison of how everybody in your team is set up as well. And it shows your overlaps. So when I think about tools that make it that much easier to build a team that really truly has complementary skill sets and behaviors and energizers, that's been one of my favorites. Also great for hiring, because you can actually build the persona that you feel that you need. Or if you're filling an open position, you could look at the persona of worked really well there. You can interview folks, have them take the same quiz, find out where their personas align. And I got to tell you, I've been nothing but satisfied with the results.
I'm smiling and laughing, not at what you've said, but how close that is to me. You know, as I said before, like when I was operating as an independent consultant, that was not really part of the purview. But when I joined Lean Human Capital, which is a simpler company now, they had me fill that out. And I found out I was selected because of my personality complement to the team. And I was like, this is going to be interesting to see how it pans out. And it, so far, knock on wood, they seem to be extremely happy, and so am I. So that's a really, really good call out. I like that. Jay, the last question I would have for you is, you know, as a leader, as a team leader, and as an individual that has many opportunities to either hire externals into your company or to promote people from within, there are certain qualities that you're going to scrutinize over to ensure that the selection that you make is the right fit, either for the company and or for the individual. I'd like to understand from your vantage point, like, what are those three qualities that you look for in a person to be able to make that decision of, yes, this person is going to be a good fit for our company?
You mean aside from the fact that they fill the gaps on the human intelligence
the questionnaire
analysis?
And that they fill the gaps. Yes, besides that. Yeah. Like, you're going to take that and it's going to be a solid fit. But then what are you going to emphasize either from that questionnaire or through conversation with the individual and the other members that are going to be responsible for that person's collaboration and management?
Yeah, and I think that, so aside from all kidding aside, I think the first one I really look at is openness and honesty. I think what you run into a lot of times is, some people try to be something that they're not. And so they have to be honest with themselves before they can be honest with other people, but they need to be honest with other people to build that trusted relationship. That quality definitely pays off in dividends, especially because we should be pushing ourselves to expect to fail sometimes. But it's so hard to push yourself if you don't trust that the person has your back if you do fail. So, it's that building trust. The first step of that is being open and honest. And I find, especially in first conversations, if you share some of your gaps and your development opportunities in a way that doesn't make you feel embarrassed, I realize I'm not a devil in the detail guy, and here's what I do to work around that. It shows that you're open, you're honest, and it also shows that you've thought through, what you can do to kind of close those. So that's one. Humbleness is the other one, and it kind of rolls off where we left off here. It's about the fact that, again, nobody is perfect, but I'd like to know more about your strengths as well as how you manage your development areas. So that it kind of falls into a similar category, but it's how you address those. I know what I'm good at. I am good at the new stuff, the sniffing the glue, as they call it. And it's okay to talk about it. And then as long as you can back it up with some examples, and how did you even come up with that as one of your strengths, which that is the third one, knowing your strengths. What are you good at? What lights you up? What keeps you going? There is this concept of, if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. We know that that's not true, because at the end of the day, not every day in the work world is perfect. But if you know your strengths and you know what keeps you going, that gives me an opportunity to understand, what it is that actually drives you. And if that fits with what we're working on, that's fantastic, right? You want to enjoy what you do. And if your passion is not with what we're working on, it will show and we'll all suffer for it. So, the same thing there. If your passions don't align with your work, then you're not going to enjoy what you do, even if we don't notice that. And that's going to rub off on how you are at home, where you have to show up every single day as the best version of yourself, because you're guiding, you know, future leaders of the world, and you know, being a good family member to those folks that are there. So yeah, so those are the big three.
They are big, and I absolutely appreciate you sharing them with me, Jay. Jay, you've been a phenomenal guest. I really want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be on the show and to share some of the knowledge and insights and experiences that you've had with the audience. You know, I know that you are going to continue to do some great things, and that we're going to continue to see Topco leading the way for its members and helping healthcare get better and better. So as always, as I tell all of my previous guests and future guests as well, thank you for being on the show. I'm wishing you nothing but success, and I'm looking forward to seeing you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Thanks, Iqbal.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Higher podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.